And welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz over here on the controls with no smart aleck remarks today. Sorry.
I just
blanked out there. So.
Oh, great.
I'll work on one for next week.
When we have big guests here.
Yeah, I know. So we've got to stay cool. You know, it's
like, all right. Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. You can listen to us here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by accessing Open Sources on the CFRU archive page. Today, we will be continuing our conversations with candidates here running here in Guelph. We will be joined by Lloyd Longfield of the Liberal Party of Canada. But first, a couple of business issues to deal with. As always, we're reminding you that we are carrying out our interviews with each of the candidates running in the riding of Guelph this election from now until Election Day. The complete schedule is on our website at opensourcesguelph.com. And if you'd like to submit questions for the candidates, as always, feel free to reach out to us on our website via our Facebook page, Open Sources Newswire, or on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. And I'm also pleased to announce that you can now download recent editions of Open Sources
Fantastic. As
a podcast, and that includes our candidate interviews. If you go to Podbean, who we are using as a host, and search for Guelph Politicast, all the Open Sources episodes from July 16th till today, not all of them are online, I'm sorry, but all the ones from July 16th.
On.
Yeah, I know.
Soon enough. From now on.
Anyway, go to Podbean, look for Guelph Politicast, you'll find the feed there, and you can download them from there and put them on your iPod or iPhone or whatever. And if you just want to listen to them online, there is a feed on the Open Sources website as well. Just go to the show notes page. We always put up show notes for what's coming up on the show, and we invite you to go there, and you can listen to the podcast there. And one final note on election night, we will be covering the results from coast to coast to coast. We'll be joined by the CFRU news team, and we'll be broadcasting live from the Bullring here on the U of G campus.
And we're going to have a contest, too.
Did you know that? No.
We're going to have a contest.
Communication is a problem with this show.
How could you miss it? You know now, so that we're all up to date.
Oh, good.
So be there.
Yeah, there you go.
So there you go. We'll have a contest. I hope it's some kind of guessing game related.
It is absolutely a guessing game.
Well, there you go. Spoiler alert. Anyway. That's it for what's going on with us, and we're going to spend the balance of the hour talking about what's going on with the local Liberal candidate, Lloyd Longfield. Lloyd, welcome to Open Sources.
Well, thanks for having me here. It's great to be on campus, and good job in reaching out and letting people know about democracy. It's certainly on a lot of people's minds right now.
I would agree. And first of all, I don't want to go over your resume. It's exhaustive and exhausting.
I'm exhausted right now.
We're inviting candidates to tell the people a little bit about themselves right off the top. So tell us about you.
Great. Well, I'm a 23-year-old Guelphite, I like to say. I've got a little bit of experience out of province as well, but certainly in the last while I've done a lot of work with campus and local businesses and local politicians, and also done a lot of work provincially working on policies to try and drive a new economy for Ontario. And now I'm looking forward to taking things national.
Sorry, just a question. What was it that brought you to Guelph initially? I mean, as Adam was saying, the resume is exhaustive, but you obviously didn't come to town to be like on the board of directors of the River Run. Was there something specific?
No, the River Run wasn't here quite yet. But
no offense, River Run.
It's a great place.
No, that's right. It wasn't
great place.
Yeah, I've been here that long too.
Yeah, the concerts were at the hockey rink at that time.
Yeah, that's true.
But what brought me to Guelph was I was a distributor for some automation products in Winnipeg, and one of my suppliers recruited me to be on the board for North and South America for them, and looked at Toronto and I said, I don't think so. And we came to Guelph on a Saturday morning, and Sunday we bought a house and we're still there.
There's lots of folks do that too. Yeah, it's true.
Went downtown. What a great place, and we're still totally in love with the place.
Wonderful.
So send them to Ottawa. I wanted to begin by asking a question, and I plan on asking Gloria Kovac when she comes in a version of this, because the Conservative government's been in power for 10 years, and she's asking to become the Conservative representative from Guelph in Ottawa. You kind of have the opposite problem in that you were asking Guelph to elect its third Liberal MP in 22 years. And I'm curious as to what's your argument about you know, people wanting change in this election? And
well, I think Guelph is known as a progressive city all across Canada. We're known for our environmental efforts. We're known for our social innovation here. Stuff is always going on in Guelph, and I think that lends itself well to the ethos of the Liberal Party of Canada, where the Liberal Party is looking at how do you bring everybody into the game, how do you make sure that nobody's left behind, and what type of progressive policies can we have as a government to reflect the progressive policies of Guelph.
Actually, that does lead into another question. It kind of comes from the campaign the other night. The debate the other night. Mm-hmm. Somebody asked about how are we to trust political parties when they're campaigning and making promises and sending our candidates to Ottawa in terms of making sure the Guelph point of view is known and how would the best represent that. And so I'm curious. In particular, about the sort of left turn the Liberal Party's taken, and in terms of a lot of its policy, there's more talk about, marijuana decriminalization. More talk about climate change. More talk about electoral reform. Is the Liberal Party feeling more left, or are they trying to appeal to the left, feeling that the NDP is going for a more centrist?
Well, I think, Justin Trudeau made a comment in the leaders' debate where we're not talking left or right. I think we're talking about new democracy. And a new generation of democracy. What we've had in the past has served us well for 148 years or so. But when we're looking forward, where we have more than just two parties running in elections, we have to look at things like electoral reform. When you look at how members of parliament are representing their people by coming back and telling a story from Ottawa, that's not democracy in the way that we'd like to see it. So Justin Trudeau is looking at a new generation of democracy, and he's looking at a new generation of economic development as well for the country, and it's about time we had a facelift.
That's an interesting way to put it, because Justin Trudeau, of course, is always getting nicked for being for being young and just not ready, I think.
Yet had a facelift, so there you go.
There you go.
I realize that party leaders with, 338 candidates across the nation probably don't get to spend a lot of time with every candidate, but Justin Trudeau was here in Guelph on Canada Day, and I'm wondering about your interactions with him and what you came away with in terms of expectations if he were to be prime minister or even just as your party leader.
Yeah, when I went up to Ottawa and met with Justin Trudeau, and he was meeting with people that had been nominated democratically. We had nomination process here in Guelph that really began back in December or so, and I was nominated in April, and shortly after that I went up to Ottawa. And he's looking at a real change agenda. And so when I met with him and with the other candidates and had some time to chat with him about what does real change really mean, is that just a buzzword? But no, it's looking at really democratic reform all the way from how do you select your members of parliament to what do they do once they get to Ottawa. And free votes is going to be a standard practice within the Liberal Party of Canada going forward. Little asterisk on that, as I mentioned the other night, when it comes to things like the budget or throne speech items, where the party has had lots of discussion in caucus and come to its own agreements, we would be voting based on party policy there. But when it comes to other things around the operation of Guelph, relating to Guelph, or things like security bills, we would be able to vote based on what our constituents are telling us.
You had a great line at the Fair Vote Guelph debate: I do not want to be whipped.
And the second part of that was, I want to represent you folks. Yeah.
There is a genuine concern, I think, we see a lot of top down, and it's predominantly a conservative problem because they're kind of in power right now. But from across all parties, there's a concern that they're getting someone who is more about the party than they are about the people they're representing.
And I think really, Justin Trudeau also made this comment in an interview I saw not too long ago, where Peter Mansbridge was asking him along the same lines about the centralization of power in the Prime Minister's office, and he made the comment that it started with his father. And I thought that was a very gutsy thing for him to say. But he said it gives good symmetry if it ends with him. So, you know, it has been a problem, I would call it. It's been growing in Canada over many years, but it's really, really highlighted itself in this last parliament, where really the prime minister is making a call based on a power of one person who 38% of the vote gave us 59% of the seats and resulted in 100% of the power that rests on one person. And that's the people voting, the people that didn't vote. With a 60% voter turnout, really 23% of the electorate has given the power really to one person who's controlling a prime minister's office that has a lot of power right now. So decentralizing that and making it more democratic, I think, fits well with how Guelph is. Guelph's a very participatory city. People that come to university here quite often stay because it is a big campus. The entire city's a campus. The coffee shops continue on, and people want to be heard, and they're intelligent, and they've got great opinions and ideas, and if you can't draw on the strength of your community and you're relying on the strength of one person that doesn't know your community, then that's really not the way our country should be run.
And we keep adding coffee shops.
You know, and I was thinking of it actually this morning is why, you know, this is one of those Guelph questions. Why do we have so many coffee shops? I think it's Canadians like to talk. You know, they like to get together. And I went into one of the downtown shops and came across a couple of people talking about environmental issues and sat down and had a coffee. And I thought it fits the Canadian psyche very well. I've worked all over the world, and this is really a Canadian phenomenon you don't see in other countries.
Well, let's talk about some platform things. First of all, one of the things I want to address, perhaps as my own, from my own point of view as a voter, is there's a lot of talk about the middle class and helping the middle class, and there are a lot of discussions about tax breaks, tax incentives, this kind of thing. My question, though, is in terms of helping people who really need it, in terms of like, and I don't just mean like the poor. Obviously, the poor need help, but I mean there are people graduating from this university, other universities,
totally,
under
yeah.
Mountains of debt, who are looking at the housing market, where to get a starter house, you're looking at a $500,000 to get into the housing market.
Right.
Why aren't we hearing about those kind of issues more than we aren't hearing about like tax cuts or tax benefits for whatever?
Maybe you haven't visited realchange.ca.
Oh, I teed him up for that one.
It is a major part of the platform of the Liberal Party of Canada. And really, the word or the phrase middle class doesn't really resonate or sit very well. Mm-hmm. The Liberal Party is defining middle class as people between $45,000 and $90,000, roughly speaking, mm-hmm. and has a 7% tax reduction for those people so that they'll have more money to spend on consumer goods or at least to maybe purchase a home. And if they have children, we've increased the benefits for the child benefits that are non-tax. Taxable, so that an individual will bring back somewhere, if they're making about $30,000, might bring back about $650 of savings there. So we're trying to ease the tax burden on the people that are really trying to get their careers started and things going, and we're doing that by taking some tax out of the upper the upper income people over $200,000 that have been successful and done well. We're looking at an additional tax rate up at 33% for those people, where currently it's about 29%. So we're funding the breaks for the middle class with taking political heat, but going up to the upper class and saying, can you help out? You were there once. You remember what it was like, and can you help them out?
Also,
I was going to say, along the lines of what Adam was saying, in terms of, I always tend to use working class personally, and that's, I was reading up about your middle class tax cut, but in terms of, I mean, you're on the poverty elimination task force in Guelph. In terms of the, let's say the bracket below that, the middle to low, what sort of initiatives or plans for a liberal approach to that?
I think what we're looking at is addressing the bulk of the population that can contribute and build up jobs and create economic growth. And when you have economic growth, then all boats rise with the tide. So the people in the lower income areas aren't getting taxed the same as There's tax breaks to make sure that they're not paying tax when they're in the lower incomes. So another part of, that we're looking at is infrastructure funding, and that would apply to affordable housing to try and make it easier for people to pay the bills, pay their rent, and have something left over for food at the end of the day, and to raise a family, hopefully, and that also helps the economy. So getting an infrastructure investment of $20 billion rolled out to try and address affordable housing from the federal government level, and also giving some tax breaks to developers to say, we know that the margins are tight, we're not trying to put money in your pockets for nothing, but you have to build affordable housing with the funding that we're going to give you, and some incentives around that so the developers have the right numbers so that they can build something where the rent will be within, or the housing costs will be within the means of the people living there.
The Green Party candidate actually kind of took a hammer to you about that on the other night about tax benefits. What is it? Why are tax incentives a good idea to encourage?
Well, affordable housing doesn't build itself.
No.
And business people need to have money to pay the staff and pay the costs of putting in these buildings and maintaining and all of the risk that's associated with putting things together. So I think I also made a comment that very consistent throughout my entire life is you can't isolate people and profit and planet. And in fact, profit I would call prosperity. And you need to be able to have social programs that are sustainable, and that includes businesses. And how do you make businesses participate in social benefit?
Right. Yeah, along those lines, too, I noticed on your, I think it was the flyer that came, this is a near direct quote, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, regarding business in Guelph. And you'd said that businesses in Guelph were unique in that they share ideas and collaborate to create opportunities within the local economy and to create growth along the lines of what you were saying. Can you give us an example of that? Like I sort of get that, but in terms of I'm having trouble with this vision. Maybe it's just the coffee shops all collaborating. I don't know. In terms of vision of businesses collaborating on a greater scale.
It's as I mentioned, I've worked in a lot of places, and what I see in Guelph is something I haven't seen in other places. Where a quick example would be, there's a company that's using recycled plastics as part of its input. It's making some parts for cars, and there's another company that is making another product that is resulting in plastic going to landfill. And the engineers from those two companies got together and said, you know, you could save me the cost of taking this to landfill, and we could find another generation for this plastic. And the other company said, well, could I borrow your press? Because maybe I could try and make. And so they collaborated, two competitors in certain ways, but they figured out a way of diverting millions of pounds of plastic waste by just kind of sharing ideas. Now, the Chamber of Commerce, I saw that so much, where people would go into each other's quality circles, two companies where they're not on each other's payrolls, but they'd say, you know, you've got a cool thing going on there. Can I see how you're doing that? And they share information very openly, and it's very exciting to see.
Well, since we kind of opened the door to the environment, I think there are a lot of people who are hearing the Liberals talk about the environment and are remembering that while, yes, the Liberals did introduce the Kyoto Protocol, there didn't seem to be a lot of action on climate change once that happened. So I think a lot of people are probably looking at the platform and wondering, how can our Liberal candidate, wherever they are, guarantee a better environment under a Liberal government?
Yeah, and that protocol took years to develop. It took about a dozen years to get all of the things ready to go. And working with the provinces and doing consultations with the people that needed to be consulted to develop this protocol, and ready to go. And then the NDP got together with the Conservatives and killed the government. Terminated the government, I should say, and killed the protocol in the meantime. So Stephen Harper got in, and the protocol was canceled, and we're 10 years later and no further ahead. Now the protocol needs to be reviewed and hopefully brought back up to speed. And Justin Trudeau is hoping to have all premiers join him at the summit in Paris coming up this fall, so that we can have a national effort to get back on track there.
Suppose, though, that there is no Liberal government, or for that matter, no NDP government. Suppose we do get another Conservative government again. We know that's not a government that is, shall we say, proactive on the environment file. So, and there seems to be widespread agreement, though, in Canada, no matter what your political stripes, that this needs to be done. So how do we work together then?
Well, what's been happening is, without having a federal partner at the table, the provinces are trying to do programs on their own. One example is the freshwater experimental lakes north of Kenora that were terminated by that program was terminated by the federal government, a program that discovered acid rain and phosphates and found really groundbreaking research that was going on in Ontario. The Ontario government stepped in and said, for $2 million, we've got to keep this thing going, and they kept it alive. So I think what you see is, you know, the federal government also took an act which took 10,000 rivers and lakes that were protected, and now we have 67 rivers, 97 lakes, and three oceans that are protected, you know, ignoring the species at risk. So that's a harder one because you're dealing with a national watershed, and it's hard for provinces to develop environmental programs that have national scope. So the sabotage of the environmental programs in Canada and the environmental conferences, and then coming back and saying, see, the conference didn't work. Well, it's because Canada is now a pariah in terms of the environmental progress in the world, which is definitely not where we want to be. So hopefully that's going to change.
Yeah, along those lines, Trudeau had said that the environment and the economy go together like paddles in a canoe, which I thought was really good.
Yeah.
But in terms of, you know, one of the larger engines that conservatives in particular have thrown their hat in terms of reliance on would be the oil sands, tar sands, being one of the main drivers of our economy. So, of course, they're one of the least environmentally friendly industries probably on the planet. So in terms of that, how would the Liberals square that the vision, I guess, totally maybe not having all the eggs in one basket, focusing on the tar sands, but in like, how do you see, what is the Liberal approach to the tar sands, I guess would be my question.
Well, it's...
And pipelines. Let's throw that in there.
I know.
And
how long do we have?
Yes.
this is maybe something for brass taps later, but...
Oh, there you go.
Speaking of pipelines.
the standard bribe. Yeah, that's right.
But it's really no laughing matter when you look at a single sector focus and... it's not just the cost of extraction, the fact that we're not processing in Canada and there are no jobs created in Canada, conversion. We're also looking at the environmental regulations that had to be killed in order to make way for pipelines and the way that was all done. You know, the negotiating or non-negotiations for social contracts with First Nations. And in the one case of XL, we did the Canadian government did some lengthy discussions with First Nations to have a social contract. But at the end of the day, we have an expensive commodity that is with no environmental oversight, that is not popular and won't be purchased because of the environmental policies or lack thereof that are associated with our oil extraction and processing. So, or oil extraction and the processing in the United States. So it's a political football now, and it's also something that I mentioned the word pariah. It's something that people aren't touching. So the next economy for Canada really is exciting for Guelph, because if you look at the food and egg processing being $45 billion a year, larger than the automotive sector, feeding a hungry planet, feeding Canada, a traditional role for Canadians. So what can we do to develop this agriculture market in Canada? And using the strength of the University of Guelph, I'm hoping will be part of that discussion. And then the second part is the green jobs that we've created in Guelph, and I've been involved with some of that, a lot of that. And we have more green jobs to come with district energy programs that need federal financing and provincial financing to make the numbers work. But the next economy being food and agriculture and alternate energy and water, Guelph is in a perfect position to play to our strengths. And so I'm looking forward to that if that opportunity presents itself, and if I'm honored to represent Guelph, I would be hammering on desks all over Ottawa to see whether we can get those things going.
So if you had, like, the power of I don't know, of the universe where you can just control anything, would
Much
you
like
shut
yourself.
Down? I don't know if I'd go that far. But would you shut down the oil extraction in Alberta tomorrow?
I think the market is speaking on that. So I wouldn't have the power of the universe, but the universe is controlled by certain powers, and one of them is market forces, and 75% of the oil-related stocks on the TSX, or I'm sorry, the oil-related stocks on the TSX have dropped by 75%. So the market is not purchasing our product, and there's fracking. We've been out-technologied by the fracking processes, and they have their own environmental processes in very short lifespan. Saudi Arabia has cranked up the volume on what they're putting out. So Canada is for the foreseeable future in a down cycle in that area, and by the time it comes back up, hopefully we have other options for us to work on.
Well, we will leave it at that for a moment.
Sure.
We'll give up the power of the universe and put it back out there. And, we will try and reclaim it after our commercial break, and we're going to play some music for you, too. We'll be back with Lloyd Longfield. In the meantime, you are listening to Open Sources here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, 250 watt of community power.
Your awesome night starts here. You Go to the Arts is a ticket discount program from the River End Center for university or college students. For only $20, full-time students can enjoy everything from music and dance to comedy and theater. You Go fits your lifestyle. It's handy. You're likely heading downtown anyway. The timing's good. The night's still young when the show is out. Visit riverend.ca/YouGo for details. That's UGO. Check it out.
Mike Mucci from his new album. Oh, sorry. His name is M. Mucci on his album. His real name is Mike. Don't tell anybody I told you. And I'm not sure what it's called. Don't Be Afraid is the name of the album. Just out now. And fantastic stuff. Multi-talented instrumentalist from town here. And check out Mike if you get a chance.
Like Mike.
We like Mike, for sure.
He's involved with the station here, right?
Yeah, exactly. I always say friend of the station. Definitely friend of the station.
Well,
programmer on the station.
He certainly play his CDs.
Yeah, nice.
Anyway.
There you go.
We're going to obviously get back into our interview here. We have Lloyd Longfield, the Liberal Party. And I wanted to bring this up because it was in the paper today. There was an Environics research poll. It was done by Lead Now, where the people who are in the business of trying to, the anyone but conservative business, trying to get everyone behind the one candidate to defeat the conservatives, no matter what party they are with. And they put you at a very decent lead, 45% to 25% for Gloria Kovach, and I think it was 18% for Andrew Seagram, 12% for Gordon Miller, if I got all my numbers right. But either way, you are the front runner. Are you excited about your front runner status, or are you afraid the attacks are coming?
No, I, you know, it's there's one poll, as the politicians like to say, and that's on October 19th. Seeing the you know, what they put out there, it does get people talking about the election, so there's some limited value to that. It is, it's a national organization. I mean, there's a lot of value to talking about the vote, but the numbers themselves would suggest I'm way out in front, and the campaign is way out in front. But what we see internally is that it's a very tight race. So it's certainly good to have a conversation about the vote, but polls are just that. They're polls, and did they get the entire city covered? Did they have, you know, you have lots of questions about how they came up with their numbers. And so, no, I'm not planning my next vacation yet. We still have a lot of work to do between now and October the 19th.
Well, I did want to get into talking about the nature of campaigning a little, and part of that is social media. And there have been a lot of candidates who have got dinged this election because of stuff they've posted on social media, stuff they perhaps shouldn't have posted, stuff they said in the spur of the moment that sort of comes back to bite them. And we've certainly seen this in our area. You are an ardent Twitterer.
Yeah.
And you have been for a while. This is not a campaign thing you started.
My wife isn't nuts about that, but yes.
So,
put that thing down.
So seeing what's going on in other ridings, are you worried about, you know, something you've tweeted in the past and coming back to bite you, or have you always been careful about that kind of thing?
Yeah, I've always been careful. I mean, everything that in my previous role, I was president of the Chamber of Commerce, and I was known as the president of the Chamber of Commerce. So whatever I was saying, I had to be careful that I was trying to represent our business community the best I could. And I've also, you know, been raised to not say things without thinking about them. And so maybe my father was talking in the back of my head a little bit from time to time. But I did have the odd tweet during a Winnipeg Blue Bomber game where I, you know, so there may be, my wife calls me a fickle fan because when they're down, and they're down a lot, let's face it, I might make the odd comment about the Bombers. I came on campus and I was helping with an innovation project here, and I was on a panel that was judging some new business. And they gave me some tea, a new tea mixture, and they named it after the Bombers. So I thought, oh, I guess I better stop tweeting about that.
You need to find the expletive keys, right? There.
could be worse. He could be a Ticats fan.
Oh, hey. Well,
hey, they're awesome right now.
Well, Highway 6 proud, too.
You know, yeah, you know, for
correct
sure.
Me if I'm wrong, didn't their quarterback just get out?
Yeah, well, that was a tough break, but they have had a good season so far.
And fair that's enough. The sports report.
Yeah. Sorry, yes, back to the election.
No, that's all right. But I wanted to turn to a policy question. This is actually a synthesis of a couple of questions that were asked of me to present. We always encourage listener questions.
Of course.
And it's a bit contentious, too. It's about Bill C-51. Now, it was supported by and voted along with the Conservatives voted along with the Liberals. Or Liberals voted along with the Conservatives. Sorry, I had that backwards.
Yeah.
And I guess it was implied. The impression I got from Mr. Trudeau was implied that the idea was that, well, we're going to support it now, and then we'll probably change it in government should that happen. But, of course, it didn't really need Liberal support to pass. And some of the contentious issues in particular that brought to my attention and everyone's attention is that, you know, CSIS has too much power. The police have too much latitude.
Yep.
Immigrants and children getting deported.
Yep.
But I also get the sense that there was a fear that there was maybe a Harper trap being set for the Liberals. It has passed. Should you get into government or have some influence there, what do you reckon the changes would be to that legislation? Obviously, it wouldn't be killed completely. I don't get that impression. But what would the key changes be to that?
Well, it's omnibus legislation, so you're quite correct. It can't just be terminated and thrown out. We do need to have laws in place in this country, and now they need some serious amendment when it comes to this bill, which really the genesis of it goes back to 9/11, where the Liberal government passed some legislation to deal with terrorism, which was something new to North America, and needed to be revised to meet, you know, the changing world over the last since 9/11. But the Conservatives just went way too far, and they started getting into civil liberties, and they got into areas that really shouldn't have been covered with this legislation. So we need to get back to the purpose is sharing information between police agencies in order to take some of the risk out of what's going on or could be going on. There's a lot of fear around this bill. There's fear of terrorists behind every tree, and there's also fear that we've lost our democratic rights totally and that we've turned into a police state, according to the, you know, some of the comments from some of the other parties. But really, we have a strong democracy. We have ways of changing things when we've gone too far. And the Liberal Party and Justin Trudeau, particularly, has said unequivocally that we have to seriously amend and take out the civil liberties infringements that are attached to a security bill, and then look at the security and have proper oversight with three-party, non-political management of the program. Have time frame of review for 3 years. It'll sit where it is, and then we'll review it again. And also a better definition on where and when those laws would be used. Now, one thing is that the security portion of that, if had been passed, Warrant Officer Patrice Vincent in Quebec would still be alive because there was an amendment that would have allowed him to be arrested with possible cause versus probable cause. One word in a bill can change the entire way that things unfold. And so the Liberal Party did get 3 amendments done, so we would have had worse legislation. And given our standing with 35 seats in the House, to keep the ball in play, to try and make the best out of a bad situation, and now to go back and say, okay, now get back to fairness, get back to the way Canadians need to be in terms of right to protest, right to associate and to have your own opinions without having to think that CSIS is checking up on you.
Yeah, because that was one of the main things for us. Cause we, being a news show, we Google things like ISIS and that all the time. And say,
absolutely.
You know, am I really going to be under the gun for this?
Absolutely.
But you're saying there would be like a wholesale changing of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And the 20th or beyond.
And it's taking fear out of it. Now, Canadians are fearful of each other. And how does this happen when we're so nice in coffee shops? You know, we're so nice when we're collaborating in business. We do things to help each other. We do things to help the world. We're known as a generous and compassionate nation. And now we have this legislation that is just putting way too much power in the hands of the government.
Speaking of power, one of the things that's been much discussed in this election is electoral reform. And I wanted to ask, in terms of following up on the early question about social media and people getting attacked on that, we want to ask everyone about the dirty tricks. And of course, you know, this was ground zero for robocalls in 2011. Have you been encountering any kind of negative campaigning so far? And if so, what's your approach to dealing with that?
I have. And before I answer that directly, this was actually ground zero. Actually, ground zero was one floor below CFRU, where we did have a ballot box set up at the university to encourage the student vote. The Conservatives tried to declare that illegal. Elections Canada overturned their attempt to stop the vote from happening. And then they came on campus directly and Michael Sona tried to take the ballot box. And all of that to try and prevent students from voting instead of encouraging students to vote. So there was a tweet from one of the other candidates this afternoon saying that I was manipulating the vote by having a poll published about myself. And I'm going, manipulating me? What the? So, yeah, there is a social media component of that. And we're also looking at, I mentioned the new democracy and the new generation of democracy, and using social media in order to inform your politicians. And how does that take place? The Liberal Party's plan is to have all data open by default unless otherwise needing to be protected. So all data by default is available so that people can access records. We need to restore the long-form census so university researchers can have access to some data. Some of it's been destroyed. You know, longitudinal studies from 2012 forward have been destroyed by the Conservative government. So we need better access to information and more information in order to inform politicians of what we need to do to help our communities to prosper. We don't know how many unemployed people, because a lot of unemployed people don't fill out the voluntary census. So we think there's no problem when really there is a problem of poverty in Guelph, and there's a problem where certain cities are now disappearing off the map of Canada because they don't have access to the existing census data. So how can you run a country? How can you run businesses? And how can you provide social support without proper information? And that's all part of this the reform going forward of our democracy.
I wanted to ask you this question specifically because we have we mentioned the Chamber of Commerce debate coming up on Tuesday. You were the former president of the Chamber of Commerce, which meant you were also the one who was moderating the debates, the previous debates. So this time you were on the other side. You will be the one answering questions instead of asking questions. Do you think that increases your chances, or is your successor a bit, you know, he's going to be a bit different in terms of what he asks?
The debate has an entirely new format, and we had a certain style that we had used for some years, and they've decided to freshen that style up and have some open debate portions. They've got some theme portions, and they've got three different sections of organized parts of the debate which didn't exist before. So I would say, as the non-politician in the room, I think two of us that are running are not politicians by trade. Mm-hmm. Two people have been in politics, and Gord Miller ran for the Mike Harris Tories up in Nipissing and in North Bay, and then Mike Harris appointed him as Environment Commissioner. So he's been quite involved with Tory politics for many years. Now he's in Guelph running for the Greens. And, of course, Gloria Kovacs has several years of campaigning and debating and knocking on doors. So I'm really a neophyte here, but I've got an amazing team that's helping me with what I need to do, and every minute of every day I'm doing what I'm told. So it's kind of like being at home.
That is a good point, though, that there are a lot of really qualified candidates in Guelph running, and part of that is this is an open seat. The previous MP isn't running again. Mm-hmm. But there's you and your background in business. There's a former city councillor, former environmental commissioner, Andrew Seagram, who has been a community organizer for years and years. What do you think sets you apart from those guys?
Well, business is one part of my life. As I've said, I've been involved with environmental issues for much of my life in working all over Canada and First Nations and really from coast to coast to coast. So there is a social aspect. I think you've seen from my flyers that I've been quite involved with the volunteer organizations in Guelph to try and make a better city. So I like working on things, and I like getting things done. So I'm not so much sit in a room and talk about it. I like to roll up my sleeves and do stuff and to measure where are we heading. And part of the long-form census that's really bothered me is we have no data to know how are we doing. So I've been quite involved with the university and many, many committees and boards here, and the energy and ideas from the students that are here as well as the professors and researchers. We have such an amazing resource here. So I'd love to see how do we tie that into the national fabric and benefit the country and then benefit the world and get into Africa. We pulled out of Africa. Let's get back there and see whether we can help with water and food issues in the sub-Sahara, and we've got people that can do that that live in Guelph, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Since I mentioned him, not by name, but Frank Valera, the outgoing MP for Guelph, yep. He's also a Liberal. But is there areas where both of you differ? Is there, what is a strength you have that Frank may not necessarily have?
That's a tough question. I thought you were going to go the other way with that, because Frank has so much strength.
Where are you worse than Frank?
Yeah, exactly, because he's so strong. He's been so good for the community, and I've known him for over 20 years. I met him when he was doing some work in poverty-stricken countries, and I was also doing some work to help those countries, and we struck up a friendship way back then. I think Frank has... What was the question again?
Your strengths versus his strengths.
Well, he's a lawyer and I'm a small business owner, so you could kind of figure that we have some approaches that would be different. Mm-hmm. I'm very entrepreneurial and driven by entrepreneurial ideas, and Frank is very good at keeping details and making sure that the letter of the law is being followed. In my case, sometimes it's good to know what the rules are so you know what you're breaking.
Well, let's do a bit of a hypothetical.
I love experimenting. That wasn't that I was trying to break laws. Oh. Now every lawyer in town is just perked up.
Nope. I think we might have created an attack ad by accident.
Yeah, there you go.
I want to do a bit of a hypothetical here. Please. You get elected, but there's only... You're limited in terms of all the things you've talked about this hour in your platform and your various campaign literature. But there's one thing. They tell you there's one thing you can achieve in your 4 years as an MP, what would that one thing be?
It's absolutely, definitely addressing youth unemployment. The loss of capacity we have in the economy, the loss of opportunity to use these new ideas, there's nothing dragging us down more right now than not using our youth properly. And it's not just because I'm on campus. I was pulled out of a job working on airplanes when I was 21 years old and told I'd better go to college because, and it was a blind person that I was helping through volunteer work at the CNIB that told me I had some strengths. He also happened to be an employment counselor for the federal government. And so there's kind of a neat circle that's happened for me there where he got me back on track. I went to college. I got my training. I started a business that was quite successful. And now I'm here talking to you. And it's mostly because of volunteer work that I was given an opportunity as a young man to get my life back in order. And I got some good opportunities. So I'd love to give those back.
And I always ask this of every candidate, so I will ask you, is there an issue you think, perhaps it's the one you just mentioned, but is there a particular issue you think that is not being discussed? And whether it's something that you've decided on your own or something people on the doorsteps are telling you, what issue is getting as much airtime as you would hope it would this election?
The future. The long-term future of Canada. Where can we be? What is our big dream? And I think we limit ourselves by saying, we need your vote, we need it on the 19th. No. We need an opportunity to come up with some plans and ideas together. We're not looking at the long-term future. Generally, politics is running on four-year or less cycles, and people do what they can do within those cycles versus saying, what are we doing for the next generation and beyond?
And in terms of... Sorry, I just got a little bit distracted there. But in terms of... the experience, because you've talked about that you're not a politician by trade. In terms of your expectation, in terms of how the campaign would play out and what you've maybe learned about campaigning so far, how has the experience been in terms of making that transition?
I love the conversations. You know, the people have, there's such a richness of conversations in Guelph, and I thought I knew a lot of people in Guelph, and now I've just met another 15,000 that I hadn't met yet, and I'm hoping to meet another 15,000 over the next short while, and then beyond that. I think I've got a new appreciation for people that aren't involved in Guelph in the organizations or maybe the volunteer organizations. They're busy raising families, they're busy doing other things. To be able to actually talk with them at their homes and see what their dreams are and pull those back together where you kind of get into, there's about 2,000 people in Guelph that seem to be on all the volunteer committees, and you kind of know that circle, but I'm learning a broader circle, and very exciting. The cultural communities are amazing in Guelph, the things they're doing and what we can learn from them about looking after each other and inclusiveness. So campaigning with me, Frank Valeriot's introduced me to a lot of the cultural communities, and I would say going forward, regardless of what might happen, that's something I want to explore further to see what can we do to make sure that we include everybody in Guelph in the future of Guelph.
Well, I think we will leave it there, and the last thing I'll ask you is if people want to learn more about you or your campaign, where can you send them?
LloydLongfield.ca. You can also follow me on Twitter, Lloyd Longfield, and you can give me a shout. It's on my website. I don't have the phone number right off the top of my head, but you can definitely give me a shout, and I'm willing to talk to anybody anytime.
Well, we will see if you get the open sources bump. Not that you need it right now, but I know.
It's a thing, we're told. Well, it will be.
It's a thing we made up anyway. Yeah. So, but we appreciate your time today, Lloyd. Thanks for coming on the show.
Adam, awesome to be here. Thank you.
And we will be here next week, too. And you can stay connected to us all week long at opensourcesguelph.com. That is our website. We, of course, also have a Facebook page, Open Sources Newswire. And, of course, you can leave comments and questions and requests there because we are for the people, too. And, of course, we are on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. You can connect with me personally at Adam A. Donaldson, all one word, or visit guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
I think we should make that a mission statement. We are for the people, too. Scotty Hertz on Twitter, Facebook, also Scotty Hertz. I blog at a place called The Spanner Book. It seems it's number one on Google. You put in Spanner Book, it comes up. So,
well, there you go.
I was very proud of that, actually.
You should make it an actual book, and then it'd be number one on Amazon.
Made of wrenches, completely. Yes. Anyway, so yeah, that's where you can find me. And you can find us here, CFRU.ca. on our website.
Yes, and you can also, again, just to remind you, go to Podbean, search for Guelph Politicast. You can find our old shows, too, or at least the recent old shows. Stay tuned now for DJ Sounds Good to Me. I am not 100% sure she's here, but there will be something at the top of the hour here on CFRU. CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. That is it for Open Sources next week. Be here Thursdays at 5 p.m. We will have another federal election candidate here in the hot seat. And for right now, we will get you up to date with Al Jazeera. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.